The call is now being recorded.
Presentation mode is now enabled.
Okay, everyone, this is Hillary Camber, and I put you all on mute so that I don't hear all the background noise while we do this training, and you don't hear all the background noise while we do this training. Hopefully Brad and Donnie are on this call, as well as Liz are on this call as well. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to hold all of your questions until the end. We have two PowerPoints to go through, the e-filing PowerPoint and the e-service PowerPoint. We're going to go through both of those PowerPoints, and then I'm going to lift the mute and let you ask all of your questions, and Donnie and Brad will also be available to answer them because they've actually had some hands-on experience with this in the trial court. And I want to remind you that you got an email warning with a slightly updated version of the e-filing. I believe the e-service PowerPoint is the same, but the e-filing PowerPoint was updated because, and I guess this is a really good lesson for all of us, just yesterday, the portal website changed. So thanks to Zansky, we scrambled and made the changes to the PowerPoint today to reflect that. But I think it's probably a good reminder that we need to be flexible with this. This is a brand new process. It's a big, huge process, you can imagine. And the clerks of every court have quite a bit of their own authority to do things a little bit differently. And so your actual practice may vary from circuit to circuit. We're not really sure. And even within your circuit, things may change. So I think the operative word with all of this is flexibility. But what I really think is, and this is from the old dog that, you know, has been forced to learn a new trick or two, the really comforting thing you should know is that it's much more worrisome in theory. In actual practice, this is enormously easy. And once you get your hands on it and really start doing it, you're going to, all of your worries will melt away, I promise. We are going to go through this overview. I'm going to walk you through these slides, and we're recording it. So if you miss something, you want to go back and look at it, or somebody in your office is missing this, they can go back and look at it on the website. But I'm here to tell you that most of what I'm going to go over, you all are going to have absolutely no issues with. I think the more important information is really how we're going to handle how the state office has asked you to, and then how your individual circuit will handle how all of this is going to, some of the mechanics of how this is going to go forward. That's probably, you know, where you're going to be spending most of the next couple of weeks to months. But having said that, make sure you have today's email, not yesterday's because it changed. So today's email with the new e-filing PowerPoint, and I'm going to start going through that right now. Keep track of your questions, and we'll take them in the end. Okay, so starting with the e-filing, what we're going to go through here is learn the rules and deadlines, who, what, when, where, how of how e-filing is going to happen. We're going to go through the portal, the actual website where you're going to be doing your filing. We're going to learn how to file documents with respect to new cases. With respect to existing cases, you're going to learn about something called a pending queue. And then you're going to hear about what the office has asked each of your local circuits to do to be in compliance with this new process. And finally, we're going to supply you with a ton of resources should you need other information. So moving on to the next slide. So this is not born yesterday. This has been long in the works, starting way back almost 5 years ago now. The legislature mandated a transition to electronic filing or e-filing, and June of last year, the Supreme Court issued opinions approving the final recommendations to require e-filing. Moving on to the next slide. So what is e-filing a good thing? E-filing is an awesome thing. It is fast, it's efficient and effective. It is so easy to use, and once you get your hands on it, you'll know what I mean. It's easy to track the status of your case, and you have access to it anytime. One thing that's also not there that I'm very happy about is that it's going to save a lot of money on postage. Moving to slide four, when do we have to be in compliance with this? Have a couple of months, October 1st, 2013, everybody's going to be e-filing. Who has to e-file? Moving on to slide five, everybody. Every attorney will be required to e-file in every case. Now, lawyers are allowed to ask non-lawyer staff under their supervision to use the lawyer's login and password in order to do the actual filing. That is permissible by the rules. Slide six shows you a picture of what the screen of the e-portal filing is going to look like, or it does look like. As of yesterday, it changed. Moving to slide seven. Where do you e-file? You e-file at this website, my Florida Court Access, myflcourtaccess.com. And that's where every attorney is going to register for access, everybody. And it'll be used by the attorney and or the staff for e-filing. Now, before you go and register, you want to make sure you consult with your supervising attorney after your administrators get together and figure out what your primary email address for registering is going to be. They might want you to use your personal email, or they might want you to use an email that's going to be set up for the office to receive emails. And that's going to be up to each and every circuit, which is the best way to do that. Whether it all goes to a central email or it goes to your personal email, your administrators are going to make that determination. So before you register, make sure you check with your supervising attorney to decide what that primary email address is going to be. Moving to slide eight. Once you do get informed about which email you should use in registering, then this is what you're going to do. You're going to register by going to that web address. You're going to click Register Now. You'll click Continue to ePortal Registration or select the county link directly. You'll fill out the account registration, and after that, you will receive activation instructions via email. And if you have any problems, there's the email address to email questions to. Moving to slide nine, this is what the screen looks like when you go to register. You see Register Now is circled in red. You're going to click that. Slide 10 shows you what happens when you click that. You go to account registration and you fill out all the information there. Moving to slide 11, what documents must be e-filed? Here's a list of all the documents that must be e-filed, and that's pretty much everything, including the final bullet, any other paper or writing submitted to a court. So anything you would submit to a court, anything you would file with a clerk, you're going to file through e-filing. Slide 12, the rules tell you what the submission standards, just the way they did for regular filing, that you're on 8.5 by 11 papers, inch tape size paper. You are permitted up to 25 millibytes in size in submitting your documents. You have to have the margins that you had before, the 3 by 3 on the top and the 1 by 3 on the right-hand corner on the sides. The only real difference with the submission standards is how you sign them. The documents are to be electronically signed. That's an option we have now. It's not you could still print it out and sign it and scan it back to yourself as a PDF if you prefer, but you have the option now to electronically sign documents. And those are the three options. So they have, of course, you're going to have your name, not Alan's name there, but as an example, we give you the three different ways you can use the X slash and your name to do an electronic signature. Just pick one. Any one of those works. But make sure that you do sign electronically or they will reject the document. This is some more of the submission standards. This is the resolution of the document. So check the settings on your scanner. This is very important. You want to make sure that you, when you file your documents, that you do so separately. So, for example, I got in the appellate court portal, I got a pleading kicked out because when I filed my response to the petition, I included an appendix. And the court wanted me to file that appendix as a separate document, appendix to response to petition for certiorari. So they don't want you to combine documents. When you e-serve them, and we'll talk about this, to other parties, you can combine. You should combine all the documents in one email. But when you're filing, you want to make sure you do one document at a time. If documents are over 25 millibytes or you're using paper larger than 8.5 by 11, the rules say for you to use a CD-ROM flash drive or similar storage medium, and I don't know exactly how, the rules don't tell us how you're supposed to get that to the clerk, whether you put those in the mail or how you're supposed to do that. I suggest that you want to email your clerk or call them about how you would do that if you had a document over the size limit. Moving to slide 14, the exceptions to e-filing will be when the clerk cannot accept electronic filing and any pro se parent, in our case, it's any pro se person, but in our case, parent, will not be required to electronically file. So you may still be getting hard copies of briefs in the mail from pro se litigants. There are procedures in place that you can read about if an attorney is excused from e-filing, if the documents are larger. The one that I think will come up mostly for you is when an open court is permitted by court. So when the court says to you, I'm going to accept this filing, then it's business as usual, and the document is considered filed. So these are the exceptions for e-filing. Moving to the next slide, slide 15. Any document that you have electronically transmitted to the court, in other words, that you've e-filed, must also be served on the parties and interested persons pursuant to the rules. And that's going to be our next PowerPoint that we're going to go through today in this training. Just make sure, you know, what I always do is I e-file and my next act is to go to my email and start the process to e-serve. Moving to slide 16. This is a list of what the clerks are obligated to do. And the first one is important. You're going to be getting electronically transmitted the orders of the court. And they're going to be served on you that way. And again, they'll be served on whichever address you give the portal, whether it's your personal email or an office email depository. And again, that will be up to your administration to determine. You will be getting electronic notifications of orders that you can then access the order right away. You don't have to worry about fees and charges, obviously. The date of that you electronically transmit the document, the date you e-file, is the date of service, and it's acknowledged by an electronic stamp. Okay. Moving to slide 17. So what does it look like to e-file a document? When you go to the portal, after you enter your username and password, you're going to see this screen. Now, this is the screen that's there today. There was a different screen yesterday. So So I'm not going to promise you that tomorrow we're going to have the same screen. But what I can tell you is that in whatever screen is up front, this information is going to be relevant and you won't have any trouble navigating. I promise you. So to file to a county, you select the county either in the drop-down box list or clicking on the map. You have your choice there. You select your existing case, and then you click File Now. If you click my trial court filings link, it'll give you a list of what everything you've already submitted. If you click to the e-filing map link to return to the e-filing portal map page to select another county or to go to the appellate court. Oh no, I just got kicked off Aircom. Oh my goodness, hang on. I am going to try to get back on. Be patient with me here. I'm so sorry. Let's see if I can get back on. Okay, things are starting to pop back up. I apologize about this. It's just going to be one of those days on Aircom. Okay, so I'm getting a message that everybody was kicked off Aircom, so it's not just me, and hopefully we'll be able to get on, all of us. So I hope we're all trying. Maybe that's the problem, that we're all trying. Let's see if I get any luck. If Donnie or Brad, you get on before me, go ahead and give me a text, and I'll let you continue the training. Okay, I'm back on. Hopefully you are too. Okay, I was just about to click to slide 18. So if you select filing options, that's another way to access all the options in the e-filing portal. So you have a bunch of different ways to get involved with this. When you click filing options, you get a drop-down box of all of your options. You can file in an existing case, in a new case, or in appellate court filing. You see that, hopefully. You're back on with me. Moving to slide 19. In your My Trial Court Filing, you can find a list of all your activities. And there you have an example of what all of your activity would look like if you clicked My Trial Court Finding. Moving to slide 20. So the process for filing a document on a new case and filing one on an existing case is just slightly different. For filing a new case, you choose the New Case button from the map, or you click Filing Options at the top of the page. And from the available drop-down menus, you're going to choose your court, your county, your division, your case type, your subtype, dependency information. At that point, you can add documents and parties, and a case number will be assigned. Again, you'll receive a confirmation email with the new case number. Moving to slide 21, that's what it looks like. What I just explained, here's a picture of how it would look like. Moving to slide 22. To add documents, you just click on Add Documents. Slide 23 shows you what happens after you do that. It asks you to select a document, and what it does is it kicks you to your V drive. When you click Browse to look for your document, it'll take you right to your V drive. You want to save all your documents for e-filing on your V drive. Do not save them on your U drive. Your administrators will come up with a place for you to put those on your V drive, and that's where you want to put them, not on your personal drive, not on your U drive. So the browse button on the portal is going to take you to your V drive, and you are going to search for your document that you want to submit and click save. And that basically uploads the document into the system. Before you hit submit, make sure you review it, because once you hit submit, it's final. To make changes after submitting, you have to click back to the case information, parties, documents, and or payments tabs to make the changes and resave. So it's not the end of the world. You can make those changes, and actually as we go through, you'll see how you can fix mistakes you've made. But you want to be careful so that you don't have to go through this. It's a little bit more time-consuming if you do it wrong the first time. Going to slide 25, what you're first going to do is receive a confirmation that the portal got your submission. But that doesn't necessarily mean the court has accepted your filing. That is the portal recognizing your submission. You're then going to get an email that goes to whatever email address you register to. Remember, whether it's your personal one or the office one, that's up to your administrators. But that email will then tell you, it's verification. It's like a stamped copy of your filing. It's verification that your document has been accepted by the court. So that's two different information. Confirmation that you submitted is the first one, and the second one is an email saying, yes, your submission has been received by the court and accepted, like a file stamp. Slide 26, then you can confirm that you, if you're still nervous after you got your confirmatory message, you want to go check on what has actually been filed. Again, go to your My Filing. After the clerk completes the review and you get another email verifying the filing was proposed, as I just said, that's sort of the file scan copy, you probably want to keep a record of the fact that the court has accepted your submission. And you can do that in Outlook. You can keep a file in Outlook of the emails you received of filing confirmation for easy access to case members, and it can be set up automatically. And that process in Outlook, I'm going to tell you how to do that in the very next PowerPoint. Okay, slide 27. I want to tell you about something called a pending queue. When filings require correction, when there's something not perfect about the filing, they're moved to someplace called a pending queue by the clerk's office. And the filer, that is you, are going to be notified of the specific problem, why they are having a problem submitting yours. So when I filed my response to my petition and my appendix together, I got an email from the clerk's office saying, your submission was in violation of this problem, and please fix it. And that's where, and she put it on the pending queue until I fixed it. When you get information of that, you're going to see that the filing number is hyperlinked. So all you have to do is click on it, and you can make the corrections right then and there. You have to correct them within 5 business days. So you have 5 days once you get this email that your submission's on the pending queue to fix the problem. Again, we suggest that you set up a program in Outlook to receive the pending queue emails in a file that can be checked daily, and we'll talk about that when we do the e-service PowerPoint. Moving to slide 29. If you don't correct it within 5 days, then the document's going to be moved from the pending queue. Possibly, at least they have the authority to give it for judicial review, whether that by the clerk or by the court, I'm not sure. Once the document's been moved to judicial review, you can't correct it. That's to the court, whether or not they're going to accept it. You can always, by the way, at that point, file an amended version of whatever it is that you're trying to get submitted, and try again, do it correctly. Moving to slide 30, how do you e-file when there's already a case existing, which is probably going to be most of the time. You go into existing case. You choose e-filing map, my trial court filings or filing options. You select existing case, and you enter the case number and click search. But you have to know the case number. Keep a file in Outlook of emails. You receive a filing confirmation, and we're going to show you how to set that up automatically. You can add parties and documents at this point. Okay, moving to slide 31. If you want to add a party to a case, click add a party. Parties previously existing on the case cannot be edited or removed for obvious reasons. You don't want to be taking people off cases who belong there. Slide 32, when you want to add a document to an existing case, you add a document, just like in a new case. And then again, you click Browse, and it takes you to the V drive where you saved your document. You click on the document you find in your V drive, and you click Save. Moving to slide 33. You may see a prompt to request a fee waiver. It looks like in the test circuits where this has been going on, as soon as you go into the juvenile court, the clerk stops asking you to pay because they know we don't pay. So you shouldn't have this problem, but in case you do, you want to ask for the fee waiver option when the form of payment prompt comes up, and you can actually download a fee waiver form at that point. And you'll receive a filing receipt confirmation upon successful filing of the fee waiver. Moving to slide, 34. So the state office has asked each of your individual circuits to come up with a procedure for preparing and filing documents with the e-portal. We recognize that it's important for you to develop a process that
Kenesha
just told me you can't hear me. Kenesha just told me you can't hear me. Can you hear me now, Kenesha? Will you send me another text to let me know if you can hear me? Okay, I'm back. Sorry about that, guys. I don't think you missed too much. Just that we've asked you to develop the individualized way this is going to work in your office. We recognize that it's not just going to be lawyers who are going to be filing. Lawyers are going to be preparing the documents to be filed and signing them, but your office is going to designate what other non-lawyer individuals are going to be permitted to do the e-filing, whether it's a case coordinator, administrative staff. That's really up to your office. As long as the lawyer is signing it and creating the document, putting it in a PDF format in the common folder on the V drive, each county or circuit is going to make up their own minds about how exactly that's going to play out. Moving to slide 35. Just so that you know, the appellate process, we are e-serving and e-filing already. We have our own portals. When there's an appeal, an email will be sent from the DCA as a link. And if you get it, make sure you forward it to Debbie Arbor or have your appellate coordinate person do that. Moving to slide 36. So here's the basics of what each circuit should be doing. You want to establish a folder, a file folder. That's going to be on the V drive. You all want to have an electronic signature style. You want to figure out how the paper file is going to be coordinated. You want to limit it because we really don't need as much paper as we used to. You want to see who, if you have a, you're going to probably have a central email for receiving e-services from other lawyers. Who's going to be checking that? How are they going to distribute what files? Whoever is going to be doing, which attorneys and staff are going to be doing e-filing and the e-service is going to be left up to the individual circuit. Making sure the appellate team is informed. And then we're going to talk about e-service next. So each office is going to come up with an email for people to serve you at, for lack of better English. So for defense attorneys and DCF attorneys, in order to serve you with documents, if your office is going to come up with an email address for them to dump all of their service in. And it should conform with this basic outline. You're going to start with the circuit identifier, C7 in this case, with three letters GAL. And then if you have different circuit field offices, you should include some initials to identify that field office. So this example with Circuit 7, they have five different field offices, so it's going to be C7, GAL, and initials either, for Daytona, Dayland, the land, et cetera. And then .eservice@gal.fl.gov. Now, for example, in Miami, it's C11, GAL. You might put the initials MIA. That would be if you want to get with Tommy Allen to decide, but in Circuit 11, there's only one office. I don't know whether you even need those initials, but that's something you want to talk to Tommy about in setting up this address. And that is where that's going to be on all your documents under your signature as to where other parties should be serving your office. So slide 38 is a sample of the process. The attorney prepares the document. If it's an original legal document, like a notice of filing, the attorney is going to prepare the document, electronically sign it, and save it in a PDF. I'm going to show you how to do that in a minute. If there are attachments or it's a document created by, there's some attachments that your coordinator or your administrative staff prepare, then they should scan it and email it to the lawyer in a PDF. And it can be attached to the filing. The attorney is always going to review and edit the documents. The attorney forwards the documents via hard copy or saved in the PDF. So the attorney can give the CAC a hard copy of the document and then sign it in real life, scan it, and create the PDF that way, or the attorney can electronically sign it and save it in the PDF form. Either way, you've created a PDF document that's going to be e-filed. Assigned staff will then either create the PDF if it hasn't been created or take the PDF and e-file it through the e-filing portal, whether that's the attorney or the other designated staff. Then the assigned staff, whether it's the attorney or the staff, again, that's up to you guys, will then e-serve all the parties with a copy of the document. And the coordinator will be copied on this email, or she'll be given the file with the original file copy attached. And then some individual, whoever the office designates, will print the signed documents so we have one hard copy for the file. Slide 39, there's an e-filer manual, and it will give you all the information you need. And every gal or gal staff who is going to be involved in this process should be familiar with the substance. And the next few slides here are all resources and tutorials that you can use to get even more familiar with the information on e-filing. Now, I'm going to ask you to move to the e-service PowerPoint and make sure I have time. I'm going to go a little quicker through this one. The purpose of e-service in this PowerPoint, you're going to learn when e-service becomes required, how to format, how to convert a Word document into a PDF, and how to create Outlook rules to streamline the e-service practice. There are checklists and practice aids, and of course, more resources, because Liz Dansky never leaves you without tons of resources. What are the benefits? Moving to slide two of e-service, there are many. It is, again, like e-filing, it's fast and efficient, it's easy, you can access your cases remotely, anytime access, and again, you're saving not only on trees, because you're not printing out all these documents and making multiple copies for service, but you're saving all the postage as well. Put the Postal Service out of business. Slide three, we are going to start doing all of this as October 1st. Everybody's got to be online doing it. We'll probably be doing it before that, but everyone has to be doing this by October 1st. Slide four, service required is all the time. The only exception is unless the court tells you otherwise. An attorney can motion the court and ask to have service by mail, but that attorney has to do that on every case. And service may be in addition to e-service. Sometimes they'll ask for U.S. mail in addition to e-service. Slide five. The way that you find to serve attorneys is you serve it to their email, their primary email. And how do you find their email? The best practice is to go to the Florida Bar and look up the email that all lawyers are required to provide to the Florida Bar. You're allowed to give a secondary email as well, but there's at least a primary email on every practicing lawyer in Florida. And you can find that at the Florida Bar website. Moving to slide six, all filings must include the primary and if you have a secondary email address designated by the attorney. So when you file under your signature line, you have your address and your telephone number, you're also going to have your email wherever you want to be served email. Whether if that's not your personal email, then you don't want to put that. You want to put where you want to be served email under your signature line. An attorney who fails to designate an email address does not avoid service by email on that attorney. You serve them at the attorney at the email address on record at the Florida Bar. So you can look at any documents that an attorney submits under their signature line, see what email they provide. If they don't, then the one on the email on the Florida Bar is the one that you can serve them at. And slide seven shows you how you can access their email on the Florida Bar website. You go to Home Directories. It takes you to find a lawyer. You do a search. You don't know their bar number name. Just their first, last name, and city, and you'll get their email address. You can also, at this point, update your own email address here while you're at it. Slide eight. The e-service rules don't require a certain kind of email address. And it really is up to your circuit which email address you're going to use. I've said this now about 12 times. So this is an example of the Circuit 7 Daytona Beach email portal that they've set up to receive service. So yours may very well look like that, or they may decide that you should use your personal. It'll be up to your circuit. Moving to slide nine, you can always change your email address, just like you always have in the past. Slide 10, you have completed email service when the email is sent. The good news is, you know, the 5 days extra you got for putting something in the mail, you still have it. That hasn't changed. So even though you're not using the U.S. mail, if you have 20 days to answer plus 5 days for service, you still get your 5 extra days. Slide 11, very important that you understand that you create a document in Word, you cannot serve it or file it, for that matter, in Word. It has to be saved in a PDF format. How do you do that? I just learned how to do this. I didn't know until I had to do this. It's really easy. You open your Word document. You click File. You click Save As. And as you see there on the bottom of that screen, it says Save As Type. If you click on that to get the drop-down menu, one of the options is PDF. You select PDF and save it, and now you have saved your Word document in a PDF format. Slide 12. It's important to think about how you want to name these documents. Again, I think that some uniformity within the circuit is probably a good idea. I'm going to suggest that you name the document either answer, motion, and instead of some crazy initials that don't mean anything to anybody but you. The other option would be to name it and use a case number, use the initials of the child on the case, however you want to do it, as long as it makes sense and is descriptive of the contents of the document. So it'll be easy for you to find and remember, and somebody else who might be filing it for you or serving it for you can find it. The email that you use to serve it's got some very specific requirements that you must follow. So you put the addresses of all of the service recipients in the address bar. In the subject line, you have to put the following words, in caps, all caps, service of court document. Those words in all caps have to be in the subject line of every email you use or you serve. Those words are followed by a case number of the proceeding in which the document is being served. So service of court document, all caps, case number, in the subject line. And when you get into the subject, if you look at slide 14, into the body of the email, it has to include the court in which the proceeding is pending, the case number, the name of the initial party on each side, in other words, the title, the caption, the title of each document served with that email, the sender's name and phone number. And remember that you can serve more than one document in a single email. Whoever sends this email, you want to think about who's going to be sending the service email within your circuit, because any query on the documents in there are probably going to be directed to the person who did the service. So that's something you want to think about when your circuit decides who's going to be doing the e-serving. Slide 15. These are the size limitations for e-service. It can't exceed 5 millibytes. You can check your draft email to see the size of your email. How you get around that, if your document's bigger than that, you can compress the document. Or what I've seen is you can serve it in separate attachments in sequential emails. You just want to make sure that you number the documents sequentially so they make sense. So if it's appendix pages 1 through 50 is the first email, then appendix 51 through 100 would be the second email, so that the recipient can organize the emails logically. Moving to slide 16. Remember, signing documents, you have two choices. I said this before, we'll say it again. You can print out the document and hand sign it the old-fashioned way, scan it, and create a PDF document that way. Or you can electronically sign using any of these three formats below, of course, with your name and not Alan's, and then create the PDF document without ever having printed it out. That is just fine, too. Moving to slide 17, again, this is the slide about how to set up your email service address for your circuit. I won't go through the details again. I already did that. So you just have that's how you're going to be served with your document. Slide 18, we're going to begin, and now 19, to look up setting up Outlook rules to help you organize emails you get from service of documents from other parties or from notice of orders and confirmations of submissions from the court. So set up Outlook 2010 to copy the incoming email service messages to a special mail folder. How do you do that? You go to Outlook, you click File, you click Rules and Alerts. Going to slide 20. You set up Outlook so what do you do next? You select New Rule, you move messages with specific words in subject to a folder. You click the highlighted specific words, search text box will appear. Slide 21, and that's what you're going to see. So you type service of court here where it tells you to. You click OK, it will appear here. Service of Court will now appear in the Rule Wizards panel. Moving to slide 22, you click Move to Specified Folder. In the Choose a Folder panel, click New. In the Create a New Folder, name the folder to collect your e-service messages. Click OK, and you'll be directed back to the Rule Wizards. Click Next. PowerPoint slide 23. Make sure the condition, quote, which has an attachment, and quote, with specific words, is checked. Click Next. Slide 24. Make sure, quote, stop processing more rules, and quote, move a copy to the specified folder are checked as well. Click Specified. Click the new email folder you created, then click OK. Click Next. Be sure that, quote, turn on this rule box is checked. Click Finish. PowerPoint slide 25. The files will appear here in your Outlook when you open your Outlook. So nifty. Slide 26 gives you all of the resources that you have there at your disposal. So now I am going to unmute you.
Question mode is now disabled.
And now we are open to have questions. Please note, and Donnie and Brad, are you guys on?
Yes, I'm on.
Yes,
Donnie.
Awesome.
Brad.
Okay, so now, this also is an email that Liz sent to you this morning. You have a checklist. And you have a little bit of a checklist. And you also have attached the rules that you use to create So if you have any questions, you want to look up the rule, you got it. Okay. Anybody have any questions?
I do, Hillary.
Okay.
Hillary?
Yes.
Hillary.
Yes.
This is Wanda Davis from the Sixth Circuit. Could you tell us, other than today, what has been your experience or other attorneys' experience with problems with trying to e-service or e-file?
Okay, I'm going to let Donnie and Brad talk to that. Have you had any, you guys had any problems?
This is Donnie, and I can tell you with the e-filing itself, once you do it a few times, it becomes a rather simple process you're going to find. Actually, we've given a lot of comprehensive information in the PowerPoints, but the actual process you're going to find is relatively easy. I haven't really heard any negative feedback from any of my attorneys, and I haven't really had any. Once in a blue moon, when you attach, you might forget to attach a certain document or there's possibility, I'm not certain, but the wrong document and file the wrong case, and you might have to follow up on that from an e-filing standpoint.
I wasn't really talking about the attorneys or the whoever will be designated to file it. I'm talking about, like, we have ERICOM that goes down a lot.
Right.
Are you all hearing that
system
can't handle the load, or
I wonder how some of these
We obviously experienced the same thing when ERICOM going down. When ERICOM goes down, you're put on hold and you can't file anything because in order to file e-file, you got to pull it from your V drive. So, I mean, that happens occasionally, but it hasn't been a big factor in us not being able to e-file.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, can I address that? This is Alicia Washington, one of the contractors from the Seventh Circuit. I know the issue that I've been having is when I go to e-file, I'm having to take my document and actually pin it to my desktop outside of ERICOM, because what's happening when I actually e-file it is the signature, the electronic signature, is not showing up, so then it gets kicked back. And we haven't quite figured out why it's doing that. We've been able to resolve it by putting it, taking that document outside of ERICOM, and I don't know if it's an ERICOM related issue, but that is something that we've been dealing with in Putnam County.
Alicia, this is Chuck. Have you discussed that with our GAL IT folks?
No, I didn't.
Okay, I think that's probably the next step for that issue for
okay.
you.
Okay. Hey, this is, can everybody hear me? This is Bob Lang.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, that may be something we want to discuss with Tommy that maybe he can resolve to why you can't do the electronic signature within inside.
Okay. Yeah, it lets me do it within Aircom, and if I print the document, I see the electronic signature. But it's just something is happening once it gets e-filed that their system is not picking up the electronic signature.
Okay.
This is Wendy. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, we've been e-filing in the appellate courts for over a year, and even when we're kicked off Aircom, like Alicia said, we work off Aircom these ways because we have to be on air, the computer more than the trial attorneys. So we just save things to our desktop and we work from there. And in fact, most of the time I do e-file through my personal Internet Explorer. It just makes things easier. It works better with the DCA's portal. So you'll find that even with Aircom having its quirks, it's still not a problem. And we don't, our electronic signatures are just, I think the example has just the line, S, line, and our name. So it's just incorporated as part of the document.
Okay, well, you know, I'm hoping that many of these things will be resolved from the Citrix perspective, despite the delay in it. I'm not going to get into that now, but hopefully we can resolve some of these where people have to bounce in and out.
Hillary, I had a question about process.
Okay.
Okay. When you talk about adding a party, I was a little concerned because sometimes that's an issue in a case, and you indicated that basically any attorney can go in there and add a party. Does that allow them access to the entire court file, especially in a TPR case?
That's a really good question. Donnie, Brad, do you guys have any idea?
They're not going to have access to that unless they're a registered user, first of all. And so if you're adding them, you're going to be making sure that they're an actual party to the case. And if so, then if they have attorney representation, then that attorney should have already registered up within the portal and would have that access.
I guess what I'm wondering is, okay, I've got and maybe I'm not understanding what you're telling me, but we have a TPR case and there's an attorney who is representing foster parents and they want in the worst way. If he's registered with that portal, can he then go in and access all those TPR documents that he's not entitled to?
This is Brad. I don't know that anybody that you're talking to right now may know the answer to that because it is set up so that you can add and then file. But what we might need to do is get up with the clerks in your circuit and the portal authority, and the clerks control, and they can set it up so, I would think, in dependency, that no one could be added as a party without a court order. I'm not sure, but that is something we need to look at.
I know in the appellate courts, to gain access to any case, you have to enter a notice of appearance. And so, and I would get a copy of that. So if someone entered a notice of appearance that wasn't a party, I'd just simply object, and the appellate court wouldn't add them.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, the question is, though, can they get access immediately? And I don't know the answer to that, but we'll certainly find out.
This is a simpler question. I'm assuming that when a paper is allowed by the court to be filed in the courtroom, the clerk will then e-file it?
Brad or Johnny, do you know how court, when you file a document in court, how it gets e-filed? Does the clerk e-file it?
Yes. Once it gets filed with the portal, it gets directed to your local county clerk, and your county clerk has people who are designated to review the pleadings and the documents that are filed, and they're the ones that therefore enter it into the system, and then after they do that, that's when you get the confirmation email back that it's been accepted.
Okay, and then this is another question from the Miami office about parties being added or removed from cases. How do you deal with registered users, like parents, who are party to the TPR case once they've been TPR'd and they no longer legally have right to notice, but they can't be removed from the e-filing file? So how do you deal with that?
Well, this is Brad. They wouldn't the only way they could file in it if they had registered.
Right,
their,
but their attorneys would be
attorney.
Be parties. But, and then at a certain point, they would be discharged when the TPR is concluded. But how would you remove them from receiving notification at that point, where parents are no longer entitled to notice since their attorneys would already be party to the case in the system?
Well, the notice goes to the attorney, so.
Right, but how do you remove them because they're no longer entitled to that notice after a final judgment and their rights have been terminated? Their right to notice is gone, but.
Or probably remove them once the TPR is
off of the case that's already on it. So how would you address that?
I think Wendy has an answer.
And the clerk would remove them once TPR is issued and they're no longer a party, or once they file their motion for discharge.
Okay, thanks. And then also, are we going to get more space in our email boxes to account for all of these new e-filing files and email responses that are going to take up space in our already confined space?
I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know if creating the Outlook system we discussed takes them away from that memory so that they freeze up that information. That's a question you definitely want to direct it at Tommy.
Hillary?
Yes.
This is the other Hillary. Question about the fee waiver.
Uh-huh.
If we fill out the request for the fee waiver option, do our pleadings then sit in that queue until the fee waiver is approved, or is it an automatic approval?
Well, the way it's been working, Donnie and Brad, is that as soon as you go to the juvenile section of your court, that fee waiver problem just hasn't come up. And
it
then
it
automatically
has not.
Go ahead, Donnie.
We've been e-filing since January, and we haven't had one single issue with waiver, to my knowledge, in this circuit. Once you enter the juvenile dependency menu and you put in that juvenile dependency case number and within the system under those parameters, I don't think you're going to find that the fee waiver is an issue.
Any other questions?
Hillary, this is Matt from the First Circuit. I had a question about email designations. We have to file a notice of acceptance in every single one of our cases. If we designated the email for service on that NOA, do we need to file a separate designation of email?
I have that one. The answer is no.
Okay. Thank you.
Good question. Any other questions?
Yeah, Hillary, on the separate document filing requirements, when we do like a court report, we do a notice of filing and a court report. Is that two documents or one? Go ahead.
Okay, this is Donnie again in the seventh. When you get a notice of filing and a jail report from your coordinator, you review it and give them your electronic signatures. Once those are, you can file those, you add one as a document, which is notice first, and then after you add that, click add document again, and you can add your report and do it from a single filing submission.
Okay, so the answer is two documents.
Yes.
Okay, what about exhibits?
Would exhibits the same way? But you got to have, like Hillary said earlier, you got to give a specific name that's easily recognizable and understandable. Give it the name when it's saved, and you can do that as an add document also. Like if it's a separate page or what have you, or an evaluation, which might be a few pages. But you're going to have to click the designation, and it's going to ask you how many. When you do a document, it's going to say how many pages, and then you're going to have to click the boxes to not only say how many pages the document is, but give a descriptive of it. Is it a notice? Is it a report? It's going to give you pull-down menus, and it's all self-explanatory. And you click which type of document is, how many pages, and then.
Okay, that's too much information. I just need one document, two documents. So it's two documents is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Now, the 3x3 at the top of the document on page 1, do we drop down our style to give 3 inches at the top, or is it the style then 3 inches before the rest of the pleating?
We've brought it down a little bit from the top to be able to meet that.
So you're dropping the style 3 inches?
From the top.
Any other questions? Computer requires for a stamp. Oh, I bet you that's where they're going to stamp it with the clerk.
Okay, somebody's talking. You're not on mute, and I can hear you. So if there are no other questions, if you have questions later down the road, I believe Brad and Johnny will help email them. And they're the experts on this. They're going
Can you tell us when it'll be on the website?
I'm sorry?
Can you tell us when it'll be on the website?
Liz, are you on?
Yeah, probably in the next week.
I'm sorry, just say it again.
Probably in the next week.
Okay, thanks, Liz.
All right, it's good. Sorry for all the technical problems today. Take care.